Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 159, entitled How to Live a Better Life Every Day, I chat with Brian Falchuk. Brian Falchuk is a best-selling author, life coach, Inc. magazine contributor, and a behavioral change specialist. In today's episode, Brian talks about how to live one day at a time and how to take the right steps every day to make it better than the last. He dives into his formula for day-to-day success and shares his personal story of overcoming deep inner pain and outward struggles with being overweight for years, and ultimately what he did to overcome his problems and help others as a result. If you're wondering how you can live a better life every day, and what goes into making your life as happy and successful as possible, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. Hey, if you haven't signed up for the Elite Man newsletter yet, go to elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter. This is an incredible newsletter which helps you become the best man you can be. Every single week, we give you the best tips, strategies, and techniques for helping you master your personal, social, and business life and give you exclusive content not seen nor heard on the podcast or anywhere else. That's elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter. Sign up right now. And now, a word from our fantastic Elite Man podcast sponsors. You want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable, right? But that perfect balance is hard to find. Don't sacrifice style or comfort. Check out MeUndies.com and find the best pair of underwear in the world. MeUndies will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will own. It's made from a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fabric that's 3 times softer than cotton. I have on a pair of MeUndies right now, and I have to be honest, it feels absolutely incredible. They're the ultimate feel-good undies for when you want to feel naked, but not actually be naked. For you gentlemen, MeUndies' diamond seam pouch cradles your jewels and gives your stuff the support it needs without feeling too tight. And the ladies will love the soft, eco-friendly fabric as well. Right now, MeUndies has an exclusive offer just for my listeners. Get 20% off your first pair, plus free shipping. MeUndies is so sure you will love their underwear, they even offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't love your first pair, you get a full refund. This is a no-brainer to try. 20% off, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go to MeUndies.com/elite. That's MeUndies.com/elite. This is a limited time offer, so what are you waiting for? Start wearing the best underwear of your life. It changed my life. It's time to let MeUndies change yours as well. Go to MeUndies.com/elite right now. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is Brian Falchuk from DoADayBook.com. Brian, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Justin.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I got a chance to go over the book that you came out with recently, just kind of skimming through it. I haven't had a chance to actually read the book in its entirety, but I'm excited because I love the topic. I love the concept of living each day better than the day before and just making the most out of life every single day. I think it's an awesome philosophy, and I think you're the guy to talk to and sort of break things down. So I'm really interested in hearing your story and kind of learning more about your process and just making the most out of every single day. For those who aren't as familiar with your backstory, Brian, can you just break down how you became this life coach slash best-selling author slash speaker that you are today? Just quickly, for maybe 30 seconds to a minute, just run through I know it's kind of a fast-paced time frame, but just run through what the backstory is there on Brian Falchuk.
Yeah, let me burn through it. So I grew up outside of Boston, and I was the fat kid all through my childhood. I was about 100 pounds overweight, and it was from not just the eating, but it was more about emotional and anxiety kind of stuff from my parents' divorce and things that ensued from that. I lost weight coming out of my teenage years and high school, but I gained about half of it back. So I was in my early 30s, about 50 pounds overweight, father of a two-year-old, and all of a sudden, 2011, my wife becomes gravely ill, actually to the point that, from our perspective, from what her doctors were saying, she was on her deathbed, and my two-year-old was watching that. And that all struck me in such a strong and deep way. I woke up the morning after this final call with her doctor, who was basically like, there's nothing more we can do, that's it. just with a sense of purpose and clarity and true motivation that I'd never had before in my life. And I made a decision that was July 1st, 2011. I'm like, I can either see this and let it slip away, or I can grab hold of that ring and transform my life in all these ways that I'm so unhappy about it, because there's a good chance this little boy's only going to have me, and I got to do better for him. Now, my wife's still alive, but, so we got through that, and she's okay. But we deal with her illness every day, and all three of us live a much better life, and I've now translated that out into helping others through what I've learned through this experience. I hope that wasn't too condensed, but not too long either.
No, I love it, man. That was perfect. And yeah, I forgot to mention you are a fellow Bostonian, which is pretty cool. I don't get too many of those guys on the podcast.
Yeah, I hide the accent as much as I can, but it can come out if I need it to, brother.
It comes out in just the right times, man. So, but yeah, that's a great story, man. I appreciate you sharing that. And did you say this was in 2011? Was that right? So like seven years ago?
So it was July 1st, 2011. So yeah, we're coming up on, 6.5 years. It'll be 7 this summer. And like I was like 222 pounds and about 20% body fat, and those days are behind me. I've been consistently about 180 since then. I'm vegan. I've run a marathon. I'm a C-level executive at an insurance company by day. I'm a best-selling author now. I write for Inc. magazine. Like, I'm not gloating. I'm just saying these are all things that were just so beyond the realm of possibility. And then I found my purpose, and it all, like, nothing stands in my way now, and that's what Do A Day is about, and that's what my coaching work focuses on. So it's just, you don't have to, you know, face losing your spouse or yourself or some other kind of like gun in your face kind of moment. You can get there anyway. You just have to be willing to get in touch with what actually matters to you, and that's what most people don't do.
Yeah, I'm sure that's kind of what you talk about in the book as well, is figuring out how to get in touch with what matters to you, right? Like figuring out what your purpose is.
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's all about, because that's what people give me is like, oh, I haven't been through what you went through, so I can't do it. And the book it's what I do in my coaching. So I'm trying to help more people than I could ever coach, is get that message out there, help people go through that exploration to figure out, you know, what makes you really tick. You probably don't even realize it until you start the exploration. And then once you figure that out, you can absolutely just point that at every goal that you want to hit. And then Do A Day is really just, it's the execution. It's the way you do it, you know, right here, right now, in this moment. It doesn't matter if you screwed up before. It doesn't matter how much you still have to go. You know, it's like the 100 pounds. That's too much weight to lose. Like, I don't, you know, I went through years of just that being too much. And the thing is, you're not losing 100 pounds at once. You know, when I ran a marathon in 2015, I didn't run it in one step. You know, that was months of training. And that was, you know, step by step, I went through that thing. We end up just overpowered by all this judgment from mistakes of before, or things we miss that we don't have anymore. Or it's all fear about like, oh, I still have all this to do, or what if this happens? And you end up never achieving anything today. So, you know, you get that motivation, that purpose that underlies everything in you. Figure out what you want to point it at with those goals. And then the execution is just like, look, go out there today and do exactly what you need to do in pursuit of those goals, and nothing else matters, because you don't have anything else.
Yeah, I find it so much easier for people to just come up with one excuse after the other, as opposed to actually facing their fears and doing the work, like the hard work. A lot of the time it's work that you know is going to be hard, so that's kind of what leads people to just kind of sit back and not take action, and just let days pass them by, and then days become weeks, and weeks become months, and, you know, years go by, and you're wondering why you're not happy, and you're wondering why you never did the things you really wanted to do. And it's because you let fears take over your life and dictate the way it was going to be led, and as opposed to taking action and saying, you know, you're going to stand up and actually do the things you know you need to do. Like, so many people know that they have to do shit. They just
don't want to admit it. They don't want to admit it to themselves.
And it's so much more convenient to think, you know, oh, well, somebody else is, you know, has this, or somebody else has that. Brian, you know, lost 100 pounds. He has a special story, or he has this special gift that makes him unique. It's like, you're great because you're unique in the sense where, and guys like me and, you know, other coaches and stuff like that are unique in the sense where we've taken action, but that's about it. Like, we don't really have any special gene or any special gift that separates us from everybody else. I mean, of course, we have our unique characteristics and things like that. that, but everybody can do...
So does everyone.
Everybody has that. Everybody can do the things we're doing. Everyone can take action in their life and make the changes that are going to make them happy specifically. And it's just a matter of actually going through and, you know, facing your fears and actually doing it.
Yeah, and, you know, you said it before, is like, you know, we can sit there and compare ourselves to everybody else and point out, you know, what they have that we don't have. The grass isn't green anywhere. You got to garden if you want it to be green. Like, you got to do the work. And it's not a competition. It doesn't matter whether I'm better at this or that, or whether, like, you know, for people like, well, I haven't been through what you did. Well, it's who said, like, you have to have gone through something worse or equally bad. It doesn't matter. Your life's only relevant to you. Why are you looking around all the time? Mm-hmm. Just like you're living your life for you. It doesn't matter what someone, you know, 1,000 miles away that you see on social media is doing. Do what you need to do for you. Who cares about anyone else?
Exactly, man. What are the best ways that you found to figure out what your purpose is, or figure out what some of your passions are? I talk about this sometimes, but I'd like to hear your perspective on it.
Yeah, so I have a chapter on this, and this is probably where I spend a good 50% of my coaching work with individual people on, is to try to figure out what makes them tick. And what we're going for is what I call, like, your true motivation, your real motivation. There's four things that really matter about it. It's got to be deep within you. So not surface level, not something external. You know, it's like I mentioned my son. It's not about him. It's about me and my relationship to him and, you know, how I feel in that and what my values are. Something that's enduring. So, you know, it can't be about, like, you know, we're talking about losing weight. It's not for your high school reunion, because what happens when that's done? You know, it's got to be something that it's going to stick with you. Like, if you're talking about wellness for the rest of your life, or achieving some level of success, or whatever your goal is, it's not like, you know, once you get there, then you're done and then you just quit. So you need something that's got to keep you moving for good. So that's the enduring part. It's got to be profound. Like, let's not screw around with little piddling stuff. Like, it's got to be something really, really big that when the chips are down and you're facing your worst, it's going to pick you up. Because you're going to have to tap into it in those toughest moments. It's the thing, when you dig deep, it's what you're digging for. So it's got to be really profound. And the last thing, and this is my view on it, some people can disagree, but I say it's got to be non-material. So it's not about wealth. It's not about the big house or Ferrari or whatever. I always use a Ferrari example because I'm a car guy, but, like, it can't be one of those things. It's got to be something that's more values-driven, because all that kind of stuff eventually fades, and it's subjective. Like, you might change your views on it at one point. So it's got to be, you know, enduring, profound, deep within you, and non-material. Those are the four key things. And the way we get there is I just ask a bunch of questions that they don't have one answer. They get a series of answers that take time to develop, and usually the answers people give me are wrong. And I don't mean, like, it's not what I wanted to hear. I mean, it's not what they wanted to hear. So my job as a coach is really just to keep asking why. Like, you pay me to be annoying. So, like, you give me an answer to one of these questions, and I'm going to push you further, because you're just scratching the surface. So it's things like, you know, what are your most important values? What can you not imagine living without? Or what, you know, if you imagine losing this thing that you would seriously feel like that's the end. Like, why am I even here? The way I sum it all up in one question is, no matter what else is going on, what will you always care about? And that's that value that's always going to pull you back to your center and remind you why you're doing what you're doing. You know, and so those are easy things to come up with answers for, but hard things to come up with real answers for.
No, seriously, yeah. It goes a lot deeper than people typically want to dive and unpack a lot of layers that I think have been suppressed or maybe hidden away for a lot of years, and
yeah,
to really get those answers out. Did you say there was, like, four specific steps you have for going about finding this?
Yeah, I mean, it's the specific questions that I ask people. You know, I can lay them out, but make it simple. I think that last one is, like, look, no matter what else is happening, what are you always going to care about? That's ultimately what we're trying to drive at. And some people, you know, you need different questions to tease that out of you. And that's why I've got these other questions to sort of bring it together. But that's what I'm going for. And, you know, as an example, like, if someone's, I was working with someone who wanted to get in better shape, and he was talking about it from a standpoint of, like, he wants women to find him attractive. He's in his early 20s. He doesn't want to be single for the rest of his life. I was like, dude, I get it. I was the fat kid in high school. You know, my wife's always like, oh, I would have liked you. I'm like, no, not the way I wanted you to.
Yeah.
You would have liked me as a friend, but you never, and it's funny, like I see, I was going to say kids that were like 40. I see people I went to high school with and they're like, oh my God, you look amazing. I'm like, you don't remember. I was thin and buff my last year in high school, but in your mind, I'm always going to be the fat kid. So every time you see me, you think I've lost all this weight when actually, like, I weigh the same as the last time you saw me. You just, that's not the mental image. So, you know, people frame you in a certain way. Mm-hmm. So this guy's talking about wanting to be perceived as attractive, and that's what his goal is. So, you know, that's his reason is because he wants people to think he's hot. You know, I'm simplifying it, but I'm like, that's not within you. That's not profound. That's not enduring. You know, once I stopped being seen as the fat kid, and if that was my reason for losing weight, I went to college, no one knew me as the fat kid. So all of a sudden, if that was my motivation, guess what? I ended up gaining back half the weight because my motivation was gone. I wasn't in touch with what really mattered. So, you know, what I started to talk him through is like we kept going back and forth about, well, why do you want them to think that you're hot? And he's like, well, I want them to, you know, like going back and forth, like he wants to be with a woman that he's attracted to. So that, you know, like I get it, you know, but we're back and forth in this very physical thing. And so I keep pushing him, and it ultimately gets down to things about being alone. And we start to pick into his parents' relationship, and, you know, they're split up and they're both alone and they're both really unhappy. And they're like, you start to understand, all right, there's like family emotional trauma in this. And there's so much deeper action in this thought than just, I want girls to think I'm hot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what that back and forth and the digging into it, like you can't just answer it on the surface and be done. You have to keep pushing on it.
Yeah, no shit. And I think that this concept, the fact that there's more to just about every type of real emotion or thing that we think that we want, there's always something deeper to it. Like, what's the really root cause of that? And finding that out, I think, can be really profound and effective in helping you to obtain those goals and get to that place of, it's not just like you said, like, you know, losing weight so you look good or you look hot, or, you know, women perceive you're attractive. It's a deeper emotion. It's connected to something even more profound and powerful than just, you know, looking in the mirror or walking by and getting some smiles from women. It's there's something connected to that that's a lot stronger. Yeah. And I think figuring out what that is can be very beneficial.
Yeah, and some people are scared by it, you know, like the monetary stuff, like, you know, having a great job or buying a nice car or whatever, that's usually, ultimately, it's a signal of something else. And so you start to pick into it, and it's like, you know, growing up, money was a problem. My dad was out of work for 3 years, or, you know, whatever their story was. And you start to understand it's not about the material stuff. On the surface, they genuinely think that because they're not willing to face the deeper stuff that's like, are you even in touch with that insecurity you felt as a kid? Like, have you worked through that yet? That's actually what's driving you here. You want to be financially stable, and that car is just a symbol of it.
Yeah.
So it's like, and that's scary for some people. Like, they don't want to face, you know, that kind of pain. And you know, growing up in the Boston area, like, there's plenty of neighborhoods where you don't talk about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't get in touch with, like, oh, I felt insecure when I was seven. Like, dude, what's your problem?
Yeah. You know, like, you wouldn't quit being a pussy.
Yeah, but the reality is that's what's going on inside of you. And if you don't get in touch with that, then, like, you can still live your life and be fine, but I don't want to be fine. I always say, like, I was an employee of my life. I was the guy working there. Like, that's not exciting. But if you get in touch with these things, if you understand them, and if you know how to harness that, the power of it to drive you to do something else, then you start really achieving. Then the walls come down. That's what's exciting for me.
Yeah, and especially with guys, like, you know, we're kind of joking around here about what other guys from Boston might say, or other parts of the country for sure, but guys especially tend to suppress a lot of emotions, tend to suppress a lot of things that they've grown up with and haven't been able to talk about with, say, their father or their parents or their siblings or other, you know, friends that they have. Because, like you said, I mean, as funny as it is, you know, calling people names and making fun of each other for having emotions when you're younger, those things, they don't just disappear. They get stored away in you somewhere, someplace. They get repressed, and those things fester, and they tend to certainly come out later in life in different ways. And a lot of the time, like you said, you can't really pinpoint what it is or what, you know, why you have different emotions or feelings towards things. But it certainly comes from the way we develop and the way that we're conditioned when we're young, especially at a younger age, you know, between say 4, 5, 6 years old to when you're a teenager. Like that is when you're hanging around a lot of kids and that's where you pick up on a lot of things. And and a young person's mind, young man's mind especially, having a lot of those emotions suppressed and deeply rooted into you without ever checking back on them, I think can cause a lot of harm later in life. What I'm curious, so what did the client that you worked with there, the guy, what was his actual reason for wanting to get in shape? Did you ever like figure out what it was, like the root cause of it?
Yeah, so it was very much rooted in his parents' divorce, and you know, having gone through that myself, I had a different reason for that affecting me, but I understood, you know, divorce and talking about kids at that age, like kids just have one basic need and that's to be cared for, especially at a really early age because they can't care for themselves.
Okay.
So that was harmed for both of us and that led to different kinds of anxiety and issues for us. But for him, it went down the path of feeling like things aren't going to be okay, which is that like basic child need. Mm-hmm. And then watching how his parents were alone and the sort of like the spiral that led to. And he was watching it unfold. Like he was too young to really understand it at the time, but the connections were there for him because he was watching it. And so as he got older, like he never worked through any of that, but he could understand it. And so we started to talk about it and he got it. Like his sense of the negatives of being in a dysfunctional relationship or being solitary were really, really strong and were scaring the shit out of him. And he didn't understand that at like the conscious level, like, it, you know, having a conversation with him until we started to push, he couldn't really get in touch with that. He just had these like very superficial relationships. He was all about looks. He just, cause it, to him, it was all about attraction and not the underlying dynamic of the relationship. So it went from, I want to be like, you know, I want to look good and you know, meet a girl at a bar or whatever, to like, yeah, I want to look good because I don't want them to look at me and be like, eh, whatever, but I need to be good also. So it wasn't just about working on, like, he was a very superficial person, so it stopped being just about, like, you know, being a buff metrosexual is kind of what he was. You know, like, it's like he was like coiffed and he looked great, but there was no substance to him. So he'd go on a date and have a conversation and it was like basically either totally empty, there was nothing there, or it was just about him because he's just focused on his looks. And so we started to work through, like, as we worked through the emotional stuff and the background stuff and how that was affecting him and what his values were, he actually became a more complete person. And it wasn't even like we had to do specific steps to make him a better date. It just kind of happened because he was growing. Like, I think that was, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, like, I think that was a really pivotal maturing moment for him, because he came into adulthood is what that was. And he still is more growing to do and all that, but like that's where he stopped being like a 19-year-old, even though he was like 26 or something, and he started to be, you know, a young adult. And that, like, when you're dating women in their later 20s versus late teens, they're less looking for, like, you know, they're more looking for someone who's an adult because they're starting to think differently about things. And so he started to naturally appeal more to people because there was like, oh, I'm sitting across from a real guy right now. Not like, wow, he's hot. Oh, my God, there's nothing between his ears, which is kind of what the and he actually was a pretty intelligent guy, but that's what the interpretation was initially. So it just, it comes, like, you start discovering yourself and understanding your values more. Like, you're naturally a more interesting person, a more complete person, so people will take to you. And if they don't, actually, there's nothing wrong with that, because you've just weeded out someone who you're just not compatible with. Like, if my values are on display and you don't like them, it's better that we know that up front, right?
Yeah. No, there's a lot of great points you make, for sure. And, yeah, I think, you know, specifically relating to that guy, like, that makes a lot of sense in a number of ways, as far as, you know, the maturity level and the fact that, you know, he was more focused on his looks and becoming more physically attractive and all this other stuff. It just seems like a lot of people who have I faced divorce too as a kid as well. So I went through that. I know how, you know, you guys feel and all this other stuff. But it seems like people who face things like that, divorce or something related to that, they have initially, you know, unless they kind of work through it or, you know, they're immune to it, I guess, in some regards. A lot of people have that, though, where they think they're not good enough or they're looking for that acceptance.
Oh, yeah.
They're trying their best always to please other people, and they're very they're self-esteem driven, like that, you know, kind of like posting things on Facebook or Snapchat all the time, like that they need that acceptance from other people. And it's actually something I have worked through over the years, you know, kind of many years ago when I went on my journey, probably around 18, 19, 20, around that age, I got over things like that, where having to, you know, so be focused on what other people thought of me. But that's really one of the biggest ways is the looks thing. Like, that's a huge thing for people, is looking as best as they can and then forgetting about, you know, the other aspects of your life, which are far more important. And I think this guy, you know, with your help, of course, was able to do that. And then, like you said, too, he's still growing. He's still maturing. But we all are. I mean, every single day we're all learning, we're all growing.
You better be.
Exactly. Yeah. The ride never ends. It's a constant learning process.
Looks are really tricky ones. When my wife was really sick, it took her like 2 days to get ready for this, but she got her stuff together and went to, it was my brother's, it was like his 40th birthday party. He had a big party, and you know, no one had seen her for like 2 months. She was bedridden for a while of that. She'd wasted away. So she had been about end of August. So we're talking like 6-7 weeks from where she was really at her lowest. She put in the work, she got herself going so she could go to this big party. And the only comment anyone ever had to make was, but she looked good. It's like, she can't possibly be, this can't be real. Like, she looked fine. Like, well, yeah, she put on makeup, and you know what? She's going to pay a price for coming out tonight. Like, it took her a good week to recover from getting the energy up for that, because she wasn't ready for it yet. Yeah. But all anyone could focus on is like, but her looks, you know, like, her looks are fine. It's like, well, she's beautiful. So yeah, like, she looks great, but that doesn't mean that she's okay inside. It doesn't mean she's not well, you know, that doesn't mean that she's not suffering. So we do, as a society, like, we put looks above everything else. So it doesn't surprise me that people who are feeling broken inside or pain inside, whether they understand it or not, they immediately go to looks. And when we're in a situation we don't like or we're not sure about, we look to the way it presents. It's the surface level stuff. And that's what we got to break past in all dimensions if we actually want to, you know, want to start to make progress.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree, man. Brian, what, diving into your book, I want to talk about the steps we can take today. This is obviously a big part of the book, I'm sure, but I want to talk about some of the other steps that we can take as far as, you know, how to live a better life every day. What are some of the other kind of key takeaways that you write about in the book?
So let me sandwich the motivation thing. So before motivation, if that's like the foundation, you don't build a building on marshland. You got to find solid ground. And the solid ground, I don't care if it sounds cheesy, it's self-love. Like, you have to have self-love first and foremost. And that's where so many of us fall down. And again, as a society, like, we self-deprecate all the time. So like, if you go to someone's house for dinner and compliment them on the food, $20, they're not just going to say thank you. They might say thank you, but they're going to immediately follow it up with, thanks, but I burnt the chicken, or I didn't, you know, I didn't salt the whatever, or, you know, like, I undercooked this. They're going to put it down in some way. Or, you know, people at work, it's all this like battle to see who slept less and worked later last night. And the winner is the one who got no sleep and worked 28 hours in a 24-hour day. It's like, we reward ourselves for having it worse, and we put ourselves down. No one can take a compliment. If you take a compliment, you're an egotist. Well, I see this in my coaching all the time, especially in the career side, where people have really beaten themselves down. And I work to try to build them back up. Because if you don't see possibility in yourself, you don't see capability in yourself, and you don't see that you deserve doing better or having better, then there's no point to the rest of it. So first and foremost, you got to find self-love. And the really simple exercise I tell people is stop the butt. So as soon as we get to something good and you want to go, yeah, but I, you know, but that didn't matter, or yeah, but I screwed this up, just stop as soon as you think the word but. Just be like, yeah, you did well in college. Yeah, but my school wasn't very good. You did well in college. Yeah. Leave it there. Or, you know, like, you have a lot of friends. Yeah, but they kind of, no, just, you have a lot of friends. Yeah, which means people like you. So maybe you're not as terrible as you think you are. You know, it's like just allow these good things to be, and little by little, that actually starts to change the way you think about yourself. So that's ground level. You know, that solid ground is self-love. We talked about motivation. You know, what matters to you above all else? Mm-hmm. Understand that value. And then the next thing is you got to set meaningful goals. And these are things that are going to push you, but not break you. So with weight loss is a really easy one because it's numerical, but I had 100 pounds to lose, or the second time around, I had 45 pounds to lose. So a meaningful goal is not 5 pounds because that doesn't do anything for me. That's an interim step, but that's not what I'm trying to do. And a break me kind of goal when I had the 45 to lose would be 80 pounds because I'd be like hospitalized. I'd be too thin. Maybe I'd even die. I don't know. But so it's got to be that balance of pushing you and actually achieving what you're trying to achieve. Don't worry about breaking it down into smaller pieces. We'll get there in a minute. But not so much that, like, you know, you don't go from $1 million to $1 billion the next year. Like, you know, that's just stupid. Unless you're, like, selling cocaine or something, you're not going to get there. I was just watching Narcos before we talked, so maybe that's why I thought of that. And then so you get your goals, and for me, you know, it was the 45 pounds. Another one was my job situation was not long-term sustainable because there was too much politics. The company had changed since the founder passed away, and I didn't want to be a part of that, so I had to do some very specific things, you know, networking and work on my resume, all that kind of stuff. I had to start to turn the wheels to get a new job situation going. And the last thing for me was I had to deal with the anxiety from the divorce. It was when I was a little kid. I never dealt with it. I didn't even understand it until I was probably like 25, 26. And it started when I was like 4. So I needed to find a way to make that happen. So those were three really big life-impacting things I needed to shift. And I put specifics around them, specific time frames, and I was going to track the hell out of them to make sure I did them. So those are my goals. Now, that's all well and good. The last piece is how you actually execute. And I mentioned this is do a day. And so do a day, there's two key words. One is do and one is day. So do is a verb. So you don't just like sit there and wish for it and then it happens, or you just wait for it. Like, you have to get up every day and do something proactively in pursuit of your goals. You want to lose weight? You're going to get up today. It doesn't matter whether you did it yesterday or not. Get up today, go exercise. And when it comes to each of your food choices at meals or in between or whatever, you're going to make a choice that's more aligned with where you're trying to get to. And that's it, every single day. And you don't need to worry about how many more days you have to go. And you don't have to worry about whether you did it yesterday. You did extra yesterday, so you can cheat today. Yesterday's not happening right now, and tomorrow's not happening right now. You only ever have that second word, day, is about right here, right now. So you free yourself from the judgment and the longing of the past, you know, judgment of the bad and longing for the good that you've lost. And you free yourself of the fear and anxiety and anticipation of all the future. You know, when I lost that first pound, I still had 99 to go, which is just as daunting as 100 pounds was. I can tell you that as a fact. It doesn't matter. You know, you're climbing a mountain. You don't just step from the beginning of the trail up to the top. It doesn't matter how more steps you got to take. You're just taking the next step right now. So every day you wake up and you do what you have to do in that day and only in that day in pursuit of those goals. And then it just kind of becomes second nature because you're actually living your life proactively. It's not happening to you. You're not an employee of it. You don't just work there. You understand what makes you tick. You don't have all this internal baggage that's been screwing you up that you just couldn't even face. You're a real human being that people want to be around, and or at least the people that you should be associating with want to be around you. And then you, like, this stuff just starts to happen. I mean, there's so many things I've done that I was like, oh, that never happened to me. I'd never do that. And it's like, I almost can't stop it, which sounds kind of stupid, but it's just reality. Like, opportunities come and I grab them because I can and because they're right in front of me. And that's not the way my life was, either the opportunities presenting themselves or me going after them. None of that used to happen. So I do believe, like, when you're someone who achieves and you know what the hell you're doing and why you're doing it, this stuff starts to really, really click, and it's additive. Like, the more you win, the more you win.
Yeah, no, big time, man. That last point especially really hits home. Like, the guys who listen to the show especially, I talk about this all the time. We have some of the best, most proactive guys, I think, out there as far as podcast audience goes. Like, the listenership of this show is incredible. I get emails all the time from guys. Yeah, I get emails all the time. In the Facebook group, our Elite Man Mastermind group on Facebook, we have guys talking every single day, multiple guys talking about some of the awesome breakthroughs they're having and some of the huge actions they've taken in their life and all the goals they're reaching. Just one kick-ass story after the next. So it really makes a lot of sense to me when you get some of these things down, when you get the self-love, the meaningful goals, the execution, which is really the final piece to this whole thing, is, you know, making sure that you're actually going out and doing things every day. It makes sense that doors, opportunities, life opens up to you, and you just start thinking and going through life in a different way. And it just, everybody, when you get this shit down, your life completely changes and you become that type of man or that type of wife, even, that that has the life they want. They're just making shit happen. Like you said, every single day, every day is a new day. You put one foot in front of the next. If you're climbing a mountain, you don't look up and, you know, see the top of the mountain and think you're screwed. You have to do this, you know, for X amount of time. You're never going to get to it. It's just one day at a time. But as you get through it, as you walk through, you're taking those steps, you realize that it's a lot easier and things just become easier. Things fall into your lap almost. And so many doors, so many opportunities open up in that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing, too, that you mentioned as far as self-love goes, I remember, I thought this is kind of funny, too. It's so accurate. Like, we reward society. We pride ourselves in not being good at something or having it shittier than the next person. And I remember just, you know, kind of thinking back when you said that when I was younger, like in probably 7th, 8th grade, I was always like one of the smarter kids in the class, like in the honors classes and gifted classes, things like that when I was younger. But I remember as I got to like a certain age, it wasn't like cool to be smart anymore. Like people thought it was like, you know, that the dumber kids in the class or the kids that acted up were like the popular kids. And so like I remembered from that point forward for like the next 3 or 4 years, instead of being like the smart kid who got all hundreds on his tests or got A's in the classes, I slowly transitioned into being like the punk asshole kid who got in trouble and who always is, you know, getting detentions and suspensions and things like that. And I don't know, for some reason that hit home and came to mind. It's like such a wrong mentality to have as far as life goes. And, you know, for kids, I mean, you can easily fall into that trap, but adults fall into it too. You talked about the whole sleeping thing with, you know, sleeping 3-4 hours a night and priding yourself in that. But we all fall into the trap from time to time of thinking that, like, you know, the harder we have it or like the dumber we are, like, the, you know, that self-deprecating humor kind of thing. It's just it's a bad trap to fall into. And I think it sets the standard for having a lot of bad or poor habits for sure.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. I was just thinking as you're saying that, you know, I have an elementary school kid and, you know, thinking about bullies, and the bullies are always the most popular kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why the hell is that?
It's not right.
I want to go and beat them up. I swear, I'm like, I could take him. He's 9.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no kidding, man. Yeah, I know. I wish there was some way to just, you know, get rid of bullies, if there was like some kind of younger police code of good kids that could just kick their ass for us or something.
Yeah. Well, so, it's like the way is to not have broken parents. Like every single kid who's been an ass to my son.
Yeah.
Their parents are complete asses.
Yeah.
Or there's some major dysfunctions. Like maybe the parents aren't asses, but like one of them, the parents were actually fine. They were getting divorced and it was kind of messy.
Mm-hmm.
And so like they weren't treating their kids like crap. They weren't bad role models, but like the kid was hurting inside. And I totally got that. And I said to his dad, I was like, look, I was him. I understand. That doesn't mean that my kid needs to pay a price for that. So you got to help him. You know, but for a lot of these kids, like, their parents are just kind of pricks. It's not a surprise that the kid is, too. So as parents, like, we have a huge, like, I write about this in the book. Like, you're responsible for a life. You're crafting a human being, and that human being is out there in the world and needs to fend for itself. But it's also going to go on, and most likely it's going to be responsible for other lives and crafting other human beings. Do you want them to all be a bunch of little shits? Like, there's a responsibility to this. We got to step up, and we got to be better parents. We got to be present. We got to care, and we got to show the right values. And I wasn't off the deep end before my wife got sick, but I was not role modeling what my son needed because I was pissed off, riddled with anxiety, and I was just constantly, like, angry about what I had to do, how much was hitting me, and whether it was at work or at home. And I just took that out on everyone. I was like, this little boy doesn't need that while watching his mother die. Like, what kind of, you know, that it's just not acceptable. So the quick solution is, yeah, we need some kind of superhero to just go beat the shit out of them. But that would be wrong for me to say out loud. Long term, what we actually need is, like, we as parents need to do a much better job. And at least in my house, that's what we're doing. We can take our own responsibility.
Yeah, no shit, man. No shit. I 100% agree. Like, I think that's really the biggest thing, the biggest factor in determining our future is the way we parent our children. And, you know, bullying is one aspect of that for sure. But there's so many different aspects, too, as well, that go into, obviously, parenting a child and teaching them the ways of life, the right way to do things, the moral code of things, and just being a good person as they get older. Like, you look at kids and you know, going back generations. I was actually talking about this a couple episodes ago on the podcast of the way we're conditioned as children, like by our parents. We pick up, even if we don't even realize it, we pick up on so many things that our parents do. And that becomes a part of our personality, a part of our behavior. We live it, like we kind of mentioned it as well earlier, like we live at these things that, you know, happened to us earlier and it lead into different emotions and things like that. But even just the personality-wise, the way that our parents are, the way they act, the way they behave around us, we subtly pick up on those things as we get older, and that becomes a part of us. And especially, and even grandparents, yeah, and siblings and people like that are around our lives all the time. We pick up on little bits and pieces of that, and that molds, shapes us into who we are as, and who we become as adults. It's just, you better be fully aware, fully present of how you are around children. And I think, you know, it's one thing to have a good time with them and be playful and all that stuff. You know, that's obviously great, and you need that just as much. But it's also another thing to be fully cognizant of just some of the things that you may inadvertently be conditioning them into saying or being or thing, you know, in that sense. Like, being fully aware of how you act around them, because it's going to, whether you want it or not, whether you specifically say it aloud, the things that you do, the behaviors you display is absolutely going to be transferred onto children.
Yeah, I mean, they're just sitting there watching you with eyes wide open and looking up to you. So it's your choice what you want to do with that.
Yeah, 100%, man. Brian, was there any other aspect to the formula you have here for making sure every day is just epic and better than the day before it?
So this is where some people don't like my book and some do. I'm not a like, here's the workbook, here's exactly what you do in every situation, and it all works out. I'm a, like, let me tell you my story in a bunch of different situations, and through me recounting that, I think you'll get some inspiration to see how it matches to your life. And then I've got the chapters on, you know, self-love and motivation and goal setting. And then I've got a couple of specific themes where I do lay it out a bit more exactly. And one of them is on getting more physically fit, like physically active, and the other is on the diet side. Like, I'm vegan now, so, you know, a lot of people have had conversations with me about that, mostly to make fun of me for it, but, you know, that's okay. But, you know, so I hit those specifically, and then the last chapter is just kind of rapid fire. Here's, like, I forget how many, there might be like 10 or 12 different specific examples, and I just give a quick little, like, here's how you could do it. The point of the book is you go through the book, and it's not super long. You read the book, you should come away, you've got things you can do to figure yourself out, and you can do that on your own. You can reach out to me to help you with that. I've got an exercise online that helps you with it, or you can hire a coach, you know, some other way to get there. But you should have enough of an inspiration to be able to put it into action. That means the book's not for everybody. Some people are like, I was looking for my 12 steps and you didn't give it to me. I'm like, that's, you know, that's cool, man. There's other books that do that. That's just not my style. Like, I'd rather share my experiences with you and hear what yours are, and let's try to work through it together. But I think we hit on the specific ones that I talked about. And the thing is, if I laid it out really specifically, I'm not going to hit everything. And what I really don't want to do is, let me ask you something. Do you know anybody's phone number? Or is it mostly like their phone number is swipe, 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 tap? Like, yeah, you gotta go. You know what I mean?
I know maybe three people's phone numbers in the entire planet.
when I was growing up, before phones were invented and we had no electricity, in this time called the '80s,
yeah,
you had to know people's phone number, or you had a phone book.
The ancient days, correct? Yeah.
So, you know, I call it like the phone number problem, or like the GPS problem. The early days of GPS, this woman drove her Mercedes SL off a bridge in England because the thing said turn right. And of course it meant turn right at the end of the bridge. But she's like, oh, it said turn right. So she drove it into like a little brook. You have to be willing to put your mind into it. You're not gonna figure yourself out if you don't put the mind into it anyway. So I don't want to tell you exactly like turn exactly here and turn exactly there. I want you to exercise your brain. Mm-hmm. So yeah. That's not just a cop out for not spelling it out.
No, it makes like, a lot of sense.
It's a mental exercise. If you want it to really work, you got to put in the work and figure it out.
It makes a lot of sense. And the other thing too is that everybody's different. So I mean, something that works for you. Maybe you did do 25 steps or 12 specific steps, whatever it was, and it worked for you and changed your life. But everybody's different. You know, not everyone's going to be able to follow those exact steps to the T,
right,
and get the
right
exact same result. But I think the basic guideline of what you have is, you know, very solid and very applicable to a number of people for sure.
Yeah.
Real quickly, how do you survive on the vegan diet? What do you like about that? And what do you eat?
Where do I
foods?
Get my protein?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the age-old question. Shockingly, I just don't really care, and it's worked out really well. Yeah. And that's a lot of my mentality because, like, you know, I said you don't sweat the past, you don't sweat the future, because I just kind of let go of all that. All of a sudden, like, I made excuses for a while. I was reading these vegan ultra athlete books. And I was really inspired, but I was like, oh, but what about this situation? What about that? You know, I travel a lot for work. It's like, what about, you know, that business trip, or we're going to Morton's, and like, what am I supposed to eat? You know, I just like, can I have the broccoli? Like, you know, what do you do when there's all these like, you know, business relationships there and they're all laughing at you? Mm-hmm. And I also don't drink. So how much fun am I?
Oh, damn. That sucks.
It's a conversation piece.
It's like, tough, but yeah.
So next half hour is just talking about what I don't eat and then I don't drink. That's fine. But yeah, like I just let go of it. And so I had this moment where I was, and this is actually where the book got its name. I was reading the autobiography of this amazing guy named Rich Roll, who I talk about in the book a bunch. He's a vegan ultra athlete who used to be an obese alcoholic. He was voted the fittest man in the world in, I think, like 2011. He does this thing called Ultraman. He hasn't done it in a while, but Ultraman is a double Ironman. He was one of the first two guys to do Epic Five, his five back-to-back Ironmen over the course of 7 days in five Hawaiian islands. So, and he's vegan. So I'm like, you know, I'm reading his book and he's talking about it and he just kind of calls it out. He's like, what's your excuse? And it was like 8:30 at night and I was like, you know what? He's right. Like, I can do this tomorrow. I'll just do a day. That's literally where the book got its name, because I was like, enough excuses, all those situations, they're not happening tomorrow. So I can at least just do it tomorrow. So I woke up, went to work. You know, I normally have a salad at lunch, so I just didn't get chicken on it. Like, it was really easy. And I was just like, oh, that was simple. Like, once I stopped worrying about, like, what about my son's birthday and he wants me to have cake, it's like, it's not his birthday tomorrow, so who cares? You know, and little by little, it was like, I got through another day, and I'm like, that was really easy. I'll do another day. And now it's January was 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's 2018. So it was January of 2015 is when I started. And I'll say I haven't been 100% vegan 100% of the time. I've been 100% vegan probably like 98% of the time. Because sometimes things happen and I make a specific decision for a specific reason and then I don't throw it away. So like on my son's birthday, he wanted me to have cake with him. So I had cake with him. And then I wasn't like, well, that's it. I had cake, so it's all over now. And I'm going to go find a cow and eat its leg.
Yeah.
Just like, you know what? I can go back to it. So I don't beat myself up. I don't, you know, I see that with weight loss where people like doing really well. They'll go out for drinks with, you know, coworkers and they'll have like three nachos and a beer and run home crying and eat a cheesecake and pizzas. It's like, yeah. Oh, I ruined everything. I'm like, dude, you lost 20 pounds. You just put maybe a half a pound back on. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, wake up tomorrow morning, you probably won't even notice it. So why, like, you ruined it when you had the pizzas and the cheesecake and all that. You can still choose to be better the next moment. So I just don't really sweat it. I eat a lot of whole food. Like, I don't eat a lot of processed stuff. I do travel a ton. Like, right now I'm in New York City while we're talking. There's a Whole Foods across the street from my hotel, which I didn't even realize. So I just popped out there for dinner. There's a ton of little restaurants in New York. And, like, half of them have vegan stuff anyway. And the other half are just like, hey, I'm vegan. Can the chef do anything? And I'm like, yeah, no problem. If you make a thing out of it, it's a thing. Mm-hmm. If you just kind of let it go and you don't care, somehow it all works out. And I have yet to starve to death. I have yet to have my weight vary more than a couple of pounds. The only time it really went down was I was a vegan when I did the marathon. And dude, like those long run days, I need to eat between 9,000 and 11,000 calories. And I'm sorry, like that's a lot of lettuce. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I don't just eat lettuce, but like, you know, so I got down to like 169 during the marathon training, and I'm usually 178 to 182. So call it 180. I think I'm like 177 right now. So, you know, the cool thing about being vegan, and I'll say this, is I don't really have to worry about what I eat anymore at all. Because I don't eat a lot of, like, fake non-vegan, you know, like, fake ice cream and fake this and fake that. Like, I generally eat good stuff. So I can eat as much as I want. I don't really have to sweat it. And the coolest part is I don't exercise for weight control, ever. Where I used to, exercise was a punishment and a control thing for me. Now I exercise because, shockingly, I actually enjoy it. Mm. And, like, that's awesome. Like, then it's purely, like, you know, stress relief, and that's when I was watching Narcos. So it's a hard question to answer because I just don't care.
No,
like I eat healthy and I don't have to think about it, and somehow I'm still alive and it's worked out really well. And you should see like my blood results, my blood test results at my physical every year. It's awesome.
Yeah, no shit, man. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to that. I bring guys on like that, health experts, all the time, and one of the recurring themes that a lot of them say is you know, having a lot more plants, plant-based diet, like 70-80%. Like that's kind of the way, and then or the other way is ketogenic, like which is totally like opposites, ketogenic and a plant-based diet. But there's a lot to be said about switching your fuel source and sticking to that, like one or the other kind of thing. I mean, there's good research into both of them, but hey man, if it works for you, keep doing it. It seems like you're absolutely crushing it.
And, yeah. And I just I don't get preachy, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. I hate that.
Same thing with the drinking. Like you do what you want to do. It's your body and your life. Just do it for your own reasons.
Exactly.
And I can tell people who focus on, like, if people are drinking and they start obsessing about how I'm not, it's because there's something going on inside of them about how what they're drinking. Mm-hmm. It's not about me. Like, why is it so uncomfortable for you that I'm not drinking right now? Because you've got an issue with you drinking. And I don't go into that with them, but
yeah,
like,
but that's the I know, reality like, of it. Yeah.
What I've learned is there's a lot of broken people out there, and my position has changed on them where I'm not like, the guy's an asshole. Like, someone ripped me apart on Amazon in my book. Like, I've got 19 amazing reviews, and then this one guy comes in and ripped me apart, and everyone who I know who read it starts coming out of the woodwork. They're like, oh my god, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm worried about the guy. He wants his money back, and I wish I knew where he was so I could give it to him. And if you read his other reviews, he reads all these self-help books and then he rips them apart, and I'm like, he's not just a jerk, he's actually like, the guy's got to be really hurt and he's trying to find help.
Yeah.
He's not. And so he's lashing out. I'm like, I don't care that he said mean things about my book or me. He doesn't know me. It's fine. I just feel like this is someone who's really hurting and needs help. And that's what you learn about people, is all these outward things, from the little kids that we're talking about to grown adults. There's something at play inside of them that they're not in touch with and need help getting to.
Ryan, what is a final send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave our Elite Man audience, and then a place that our listeners can check out more about your work, especially the book?
Normally, I would pick some kind of quote from Buddha, but I think for this audience, like we were getting at it before, you know, men, especially like in your 20s and stuff, guys, just self-love. And I'm not talking about being egotistical pricks. I'm talking about, like, honestly, not the cover-up social media look good kind of stuff. Talking about really deep down, do you actually think you're good? Do you think you deserve it? Do you think you're capable? Work on that. Just like allow for the fact that actually you could be a great human being who can achieve what you want to achieve. Forget the outward appearance part. If I could leave them with anything, start with that, and then you've just got this platform to just destroy everything you want to do in your life, which is an awesome place to be.
Love it, man. And a place our listeners can check out more about you.
Yeah, so, you know, you mentioned it before, just hit doadaybook.com. It's a book called Do A Day, Do A Day Book. I link everything up there. So I write for Inc. Magazine every week. A lot of the articles are tied to this. They're kind of businessy themed, but you can get to the Inc. articles. I'm super active on Twitter. It's at Brian Falchuk, but then you got to learn how to spell my name. So if you just go to doadaybook.com, it's all linked up there. And of course, you can get the book and stuff. And it's on, like, you know, paperback, Kindle, iBooks, Nook, Audible, like it's in every format you can imagine. So yeah, it's all out there. Doaday.com, and you can get to everything.
Awesome. Brian, thanks again for coming on the show, man. Really do appreciate it. And I know our guys are going to love this one. So take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, man.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.